And welcome to the Aha Moment podcast for 2022. My name is Erin Backus, and I have with me my co-host, of course, Irene.
Hello, hello. Coming from the north of Maine. It's a beautiful area. You guys are complaining about being cold down there, but we're just accustomed to it.
We're kicking off 2022 with our guest, Peg Schofield. Say hi, Peg.
Hi.
I just wanted to bring you in the conversation because for us in like our areas, Irene, it's like bitter, frigid cold.
Yeah.
And so it's funny that up in Maine, it's warm, I guess, compared to where we are.
Yeah. We haven't gotten as advanced as you have, that's for sure. Our aconites are blooming, which are just starting to emerge out of the ground, but our hellebores aren't showing anything yet, so we're a little behind you. So
yeah, all this stuff is like not happy. Even close.
Yeah.
But it's so nice to get back to this podcast for those of you who are following us. We took a few months off, Irene and I, just to catch up with life in general. So it is the end of March, and we're finally getting able to do a podcast as well. But like I said before, we have Peg Schofield with us this evening. And Peg is a registered horticultural therapist. Peg, how long have you been an HTR?
I think I got my HTR around 2006.
Right. Mm-hmm. And where'd you go through?
well,
that was a point system back then, right?
That was a point system.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That was a point system. That was a different animal. I mean, you got, of course, points for your college degrees. I have a bachelor's and a master's. You got points for being part of the AHTA, the local group, which is mm-hmm. the Mid-Atlantic mm-hmm. chapter down here. Mm-hmm. It was called a chapter then. It's a network
right
now.
Right, now networks.
And I had been the president and on the board and doing presentations and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, I had accumulated enough points, and I mm-hmm. finally said, you know what? Let me go for this. I also had also picked up a degree in horticulture along the way from Temple University, and that's where I teach now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I had the horticulture piece, and I knew I had found my passion, which was mm-hmm. plants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
so Erin is going to provide a nice formal introduction.
Oh, it's okay. I don't have to do a formal intro.
You don't have Are we going to change it up for 2022?
Maybe. I don't know. Kind of spicing it in there.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but as you said, Peg, you are the adjunct professor and program director of the Horticultural Therapy Certificate Program at Temple. Right. And you have been in the past served as president of the Mid-Atlantic. You've also served as the director of horticulture at the Cathedral Village Retirement Community. But you currently work as a horticulture consultant and horticultural therapist, serving communities of breast cancer survivors, individuals with PTSD, and those coping with grief experiences. So we are very happy to have you on here and to tell us your aha moment and your story.
Yeah, well, so you were naturally segueing to that but we needed a pause for a moment because
I had to do my thing. I don't have any things in this part. I don't have any things in this podcast besides a few.
oh boy. Well, we should spice it up, Erin. That's all there is to it. So Peg, sometimes what we do is we like to ask first off, you know, what you're doing now at Temple in the sense of who you're serving. It sounds like in your bio, you've indicated that you work with those with who are survivors of breast cancer and those who have suffered with or lived with PTSD and people who deal with grief. So how did you come across that these were the populations, these are the people and their, you know, I would say, adverse situations that they've dealt with. How did you choose to work with these individuals?
Well, first of all, I, as director of horticulture at Cathedral Village, which is a CCRC in Philadelphia, I worked with not only the residents which were in independent living, but also, and most rewardingly, working with the residents in the nursing home, who, of course, were in medical situations or Alzheimer's dementia. And so for 13 years, I was there doing workshops with those specific different populations every week. and was just, we had a green, they had just built a 2,700 square foot greenhouse.
And wow, gave me the, yes, great.
Big greenhouse, you know, with the headhouse and the greenhouse. And handed me the keys and said, good luck. But fortunately, you know.
Was there an endowment for somebody who was a resident there who loved horticulture? I mean, how did, you don't hear of very many assisted living facilities that, you know, take to adopt a greenhouse like this. That's a remarkable situation.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to get this gig. They were going through this large building cycle. And they built other things besides the greenhouse. But fortunately, the president at the time had the foresight to know something about something called horticultural therapy.
Oh, good.
About, and had this greenhouse built, handed me the keys, and off I was. Now, of course, handing a keys to a horticulturist is like handing the keys to a laboratory to a scientist. It's absolutely the sandbox.
Yeah, totally. The candy store. Oh, my goodness.
OMG. So I just, a few plants were in there. I had a good budget. So I just went wild, got these programs up and going, did all these workshops. We're doing, every day was doing a workshop with some population, et cetera, et cetera. And that was really rewarding. It was I was also the director of horticulture, meaning I had responsibility for this 40-acre campus. But I was a horticulturist, so I knew all this stuff. I came from the horticulture school and from having my own landscape business and all this. So that's all good. So that was a nice hand in glove kind of situation. So I was there for 13 years. It was a lot of physical work. As we all know, if we're horticulturists, how hard physically the body is going to be beaten up with the guards outside, the greenhouse inside, the 40 acres outside, all of this kind of stuff. So there came a point in time when it was a transition time for me and my family. And I thought, okay, I'm going to transition out of this job.
Out of the labor intensive aspect.
Out of the labor intensive, not getting any younger. So, but I had the fortune in teaching the horticultural therapy certificate program courses, the three horticulture courses that AHTA wants you to have. We're an accredited program with AHTA. So I had the good fortune to meet many marvelous students, many of whom, interestingly enough, are not college age students. They're not 19, 20 year olds. They're older adults and mostly women. Mostly women.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. 95% women. Okay. So they're transitioning also from maybe corporate America, or they're retiring from something and transitioning to something else, or they've had some kind of midlife crisis. So welcome to my world, right?
or a lot of, I mean, from my standpoint, and I've met more of them, more people like this, where they've had something personally happen in their life, and horticulture was their refuge. Yeah. And so then they found that there was something to this. But to your point, yes, it seems to attract people who have undergone something of a recalibration in their life.
Right. And fortunately, they recognize this as a healing modality. So you don't have to convince them that horticultural therapy healing modality. They've, as you said so well, they've been there, done that. And now they want to formalize something, take these courses, and get into this realm. Mm-hmm. So I had the good fortune of one of the women in my class had started her own nonprofit called Heroic Gardens. And Heroic mm-hmm. Gardens is to serve underserved military veterans. Okay. Mm. So these are the people, frankly, with PTSD. Mm-hmm. So they have that whole mental health issues going. They may be physically compromised in some way, but mostly it's the mental health of PTSD. So I am the one that does all the programs now, Heroic Arts. I run the programs and the founder.
I see.
Administration and fund.
I didn't know that. So
I have the privilege of working with groups from the VA. This is all in the Philadelphia area, mm-hmm. or in Philadelphia itself. VA, we have a group. We have a group in West Philly, which is a homeless shelter for female vets. I have another group at the Veterans Multi-Service Center in the city. And we have a big program of former high school. It's called Edison 64. And this is a residence.
I'm sorry, it's called which?
Edison 64.
Ah, okay.
And it is the old, if you want to know the story, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It's the old Edison High School. They uh-huh. built a new high school, and then this huge big four-story building was just a former high school.
Uh-huh.
It's the Veterans Multi-Service Center acquired, renovated, and now it's a residence for veterans. This is in North Philadelphia.
Okay.
The poorer part. And the 64, it's called Edison 64 because this high school had 64 young men go to Vietnam and be killed. And this is the highest number of
like one area, one country.
From any high school in the country, this was the highest number of people who went to Vietnam and did not live. So we called Edison, it's called Edison 64. There's a memorial there to the Vietnam folks. And we have come in and done raised beds and inverted stair gardens. Mm-hmm. And we have created a gardening program for these vets. Again, this is in North Philly, which is a very poor section of this.
Mm-hmm.
It is a secure area in terms of fencing. So it's not like it's gonna get vandalized. Mm-hmm. And we have been off and running on that project. Mm-hmm. So we're very proud of that project.
So how many veterans are you working with on an average basis in the last couple of years?
We also do, to not answer your question.
I know, right?
Redirect you, hold on.
We also do, if there's veterans that have homes and have some landscaping issues and they can't physically or
like a garden angel
deal with this, we go and renovate and do, you know, what we can at their
right.
at their actual homes, their residence.
Right.
So again, we have these programs going on in Philly, and then we also do this residential stuff. We also do like fixing up. We did a VFW hall in Marlton, New Jersey, and we're going to mm-hmm. work with a Foreign Legion group in South Philly mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. So I'm also a landscape designer. So I design these projects. I run the programs, and I'm just sort of having the time of my life.
This is what I want to be doing too. I mean, I love programming. I love running the sessions, but I really love the idea of getting it to be applied to the residential settings as well, so that they can feel connected to their property and able to be amongst their own, you know, to sustain that independence that they value, you know what I mean, as much as possible.
And again, frankly, it speaks to the healing power of plants.
Right.
In that, okay, we'll fix something up so that, as you just said, now they can do it, or create a little garden that they can do, clean up and prune the shrubbery and add new shrubbery and that kind of thing to make it a more a calming, healing backyard, perhaps.
Right.
That kind of thing. But you know what the big key I found with working with these underserved vets, meaning that they, mm-hmm. you know, they're not wealthy. Mm-hmm. These other folks that, yeah. The fact that someone cares mm-hmm. to come out with a whole group of volunteers and on a weekend and mm-hmm. do this for them, it blows their mind because they don't feel,
You're making me like really, really, woo!
It's about caring, and it truly is about the heart to heart of, you know, we're not all veterans. I'm not personally a veteran, and yet we just go and do this, and we do it. Everything we do is for free to them. And what I found is, as I found out doing the geriatric folks for all those years, was. You know, I go in thinking I'm going to be a teacher mm-hmm. and I find out I'm this.
They teach you. Yep.
It's so heartwarming. I almost feel guilty doing it.
Well, you're giving as much of the tools and the and the guidance and the inspiration for them. That's an asset that, you know, like you said, they don't get a lot of people don't get the attention that they deserve. So.
Right. And again, these are our veterans. Right. These are people that put their hand up and say, oh, yes, I will go. I will go to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I will go mm-hmm. to the Korean War. I will go mm-hmm. serve my country.
My significant other is a veteran, and he has shown me a significant amount of just more awareness about how they are underserved or not provided enough attention or given enough of that attention to the care down the road. And even veterans who are very ambivalent to advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
So it's really important to be, you know, another initiator. And so the more the merrier for that matter on your end, for sure. So not to be hung up on numbers, but I am just curious only because you're in a city environment. So are we talking like hundreds, or I'm just trying to wrap my mind around how many of their of employees and volunteers are there of you? And then how many veterans are you serving on these particular efforts, on the residential effort and on the facility effort?
Well, on the residential effort, of course, we have a website, heroicgardens.org. Uh-huh. And you go to the website and you see what's coming up that you could volunteer for, and you click on that and you're off and running. So we can get, and then we also team up with other organizations such as Habitat for Humanity, which we've teamed up with. And if they have, for instance, if Habitat has a veteran home, mm. that they're mm-hmm. doing, they'll call us and say, hey, there's some landscaping that could be done. We're going to build the deck, but if you could do the landscaping, blah, blah, blah. And we say, yes. And we can get, so we can get some folks from Habitat to help volunteer. And then we have sort of a core group of volunteers, both civilians and veterans, that are very, very dedicated to this work. Mm-hmm. So we could get 20 people, 30 people, come and, you know, do a cleanup or do a park cleanup or something like that, mm-hmm. Or do an installation kind of mm-hmm. thing. In terms of the different areas, my groups that I do, for instance, the homeless shelter has 12 beds. Mm-hmm. Now they rotate in and out. I mean, they usually stay there for 9 to 12 months and then they find their own apartment. So, but they went from homelessness, Lord, how do you get to be homeless? Homelessness. To their own apartment. So that's a cycle, and they stay in this home mm-hmm. in West Philly. My VA group is a small group. I'm going to say 6 to 10 folks. Again, there's sort of a rotation of that. Mm-hmm. The Edison 64 has probably 70 residents there.
Wow.
Story.
But it's up to the individuals to participate in yes. what you're actually leading as activities or anything like that. basically become the gardeners with you in that respect.
Yes, yes, yeah. We want them to, yeah, hands-on, mm-hmm. get out there. Mm-hmm. Let me show you how to do this, what this is. And of course, these are mostly city folks, mm-hmm. and minority group members and city folks, and really don't know, they haven't had the opportunity to have much interaction with plants, gardening, et cetera, et cetera. So we're there to teach, but we're there to share this activity with them, mm-hmm. and they're very enthusiastic. I mean, growing your own food and raised beds, who knew?
Right.
This is like,
and you're a 501c3, right? You're a nonprofit. The Heroic Gardens is a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit.
So do you, what is the source of, although you have, it sounds like plenty of labor involved, but the materials, to afford the materials and to afford your, you know, I don't know if you are quote unquote retired, but are you being compensated as like the leader of this whole, you know, or manager of these projects? How does the funding come into hand?
Well, just to circle back, I think we've had in the past year up to 70 volunteers.
Wow.
If you want
That's
to know.
Great.
You know, on different projects. Okay.
Yeah.
So of course, fundraising is always the deal when you're a nonprofit. Yeah. And we do things like sell t-shirts, you know, and magnets and stuff like that. But what you need to do is pound the pavement and get grants from different organizations.
Right.
And our founder, his name is Colly Turner, has done that. I don't do the fundraising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's the numbers person for you in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we need to raise money so that we can then go and buy plants. And sometimes we get donations and different organizations sometimes are different businesses such as Lowe's and Home Depot can be put in.
Yes,
local garden
yes.
centers will
the VA that I worked with up here in Maine, they had a donation from Home Depot for one of the therapeutic gardens. They seem to be a really good contributor to it.
But that's, you know, that's a lot of legwork, as you realize.
Oh yeah.
That's a lot of legwork to do all that contacting and person to person and build relationships and that kind of thing. That's a lot of legwork to do. So that's what they do. I do the programs. Another program I'll just tell you about real quick that we started to do last year, because last year was the year that the United States pulled out of Afghanistan very quickly, if you'll remember.
Yep.
Now, if you're not in the veteran community, this means almost nothing to you and you almost forgot about. If you're in the veteran community, this was where it hit the fan. And the veterans were nuts. A lot of our vets, you know, we were in Afghanistan for 20 years. A lot of the vets we're working with, guess what? And our volunteers, guess what? We're in Afghanistan over those 20 years, you know? They were medics in Desert Storm, and they were blowing things up in Desert Shield and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They were very upset, is what I'm saying. Suicides went up. It just... Because I think because the United States got out so quickly, they didn't win. And when you're in the military, the point is to win, not surrender, not abandon, not, okay. So
not
that aside, let me, so we said, okay, our guys and gals, right? Because there were women in Afghanistan too, are very upset. What can we do? What can we Heroic Gardens do? And so of course I put up my hand and say, well, here's what we could do. I know something about forest bathing.
Mm.
So I've started on a regular basis doing forest bathing groups with the VA and just with our own Heroic Garden group. I just did one yesterday on Sunday and thought I'd freeze to death, but we did it. we watched Valley Forge National Historical Park. It was very cool. And it's local here. And of course that was, that's sacred ground too, Valley. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we started doing that. So that's sort of, I'm not saying that is horticultural therapy, but I am saying that is therapy to go do.
We have it at the gardens, forest therapy. It's very valuable.
So again, I saw that on, I saw that on Facebook. You guys did a post about it. I followed them on Facebook. I followed.
Oh, I see. And I don't mean to cut you off there, but I also want to make sure that we recognize the time of which you and the development of your horticultural therapy journey. What first off lit the fire for you to say, oh my gosh, there's something to this. And you said you had taken horticulture training, but was there a specific moment or were there several moments that just really triggered you to say, I'm going into this direction?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And I'm going to tell you a story.
Oh, goody.
I love telling stories.
You love hearing them. I love it.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I was early on at Cathedral Village, just the first couple months, you know, just starting this program in this greenhouse, and they bring the folks down to the head house of the greenhouse and we do programming there, or I take them into the actual under the glass part, all that kind of stuff. And so we have, you know, when folks are in nursing homes, it's you want to, the goals would be socialization. The goals would be engagement in what time of year is it and what day is it and what are we doing, mm-hmm. You smell this flower and let's repot things and all that kind of stuff. So it's a quality of life. It's not a vocational program, obviously, it's quality of life. So soon after I started all of this, and this is so cool, this story, because this is when I knew this really works. And I had read the books and I had, you know, I knew about this, but so one day the managers all ate lunch together up in a dining room. And one day I was eating lunch and the director of nursing came, sort of approached me quickly. And she's a big woman, so it was a little scary. And she came up to me, I was eating lunch, and she said, Peg, what have you done with Mrs. So-and-so? And I said, why? Is she missing? I didn't do anything to her. What have I done with Mrs. So-and-so? And she said, no, you don't understand. Since she's been going to your program, before she would never talked. And she was not compliant with the nurses in terms of taking medication and sort of following the routine that you live in a nursing home. She was just non-compliant, not taking medication and not talking. Okay. And so then the nurse says, and now guess what? She's talking. And she's taking her medication. And I said, she wasn't talking? I said, she always talked. We were talking about plants in the greenhouse. Yeah. I, honest to God, did not know this woman was not talking to anyone else. Until this director of nursing told me.
Right.
And I thought, wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Heck, you got me crying.
I know, she's running.
I love it. That's awesome.
And the thing I like to say, and I like to say to my students is, look, it wasn't me, you know, and it's not you, but you are the facilitator. It's the plants. It's the plants, this connection with nature, this love of and beauty of plants. This is real. This is real kind of soul to soul stuff.
Yeah. You know?
And for these, in my case, these older folks who, you know, they know they're at the end of their life. I mean, let's not be naive. We all know this. Yeah. Okay. But to be
and
there.
And they don't want you, to belittle that either, or to avert that, you know, just be upfront and frank about some of these things too, because they appreciate that as well, oftentimes.
Right. No, I agree. Again, they know what the deal is. But they were so appreciative of having this program, you know, and sometimes I'd have people come in who could hardly move, but they could just move one finger. And I said, great, I'll hold the pot. You make the hole. One finger was able to do that. I said, fine. And then we'll move on to the person next to you and they can put the transplant in and blah, blah, blah. We do this assembly line. I never wanted anyone to feel that they were not adequate. They already feel worthless and sort of the throwaway elders of our society. I wanted them to feel as important as everyone else doing whatever this project was in terms of plants. And we did a lot of propagation because it was a greenhouse. And that, when you say, well, what was your aha moment? And I think realizing early on that this was so, this was very real. This was a very real healing modality. And now with my vets with PTSD and when they say, wow, you know, not everything needs a pill.
So yeah. with the practitioner, or I'm sorry, with the participants who are engaged in your horticultural therapy, do you actually do a clinical application, or do you run it more as a therapeutic horticulture practice?
Well, I'm basically working with the programming people at these different places, such as the social worker at the VA, that kind of thing. So she knows, certainly has therapeutic goals that we can discuss, and we can discuss a little bit about who these people are. Now, mostly I go in blind. I don't know them, they don't know me, but I know I have one thing up my sleeve, and that is the plants. You know?
Your magic wand.
It's like bringing puppies or kittens to and putting them on the table. I mean, who's not going to jump onto the table and interact,
Plants are even better sometimes because if they're not flowering, you can't be allergic to them. Unlike sometimes people are allergic to pets. So, you know, plants, you don't have that problem. So deadhead, just take the pollen off if that's the issue.
If that's an issue, yeah. But the interesting thing about vets, just to circle back to my vets now, is that as they're working around the table and doing, you know, flower arranging or repotting something or doing seeds or whatever we're doing, it doesn't matter in the sense that they start talking.
Right.
And they're their own community, you know, they're their own tribe, which actually I'm not a part of because I'm not a vet, but they start talking, and boy, do you hear some stories. And again, most of my folks are minority members. So they're, you know, Black folks. And just to hear their stories and to really have communicate, you know, the macro and micro aggressions that are foisted upon them on a daily basis, being women, being minorities, being vets that may have physical or certainly mental difficulties. Wow. I mean, my heart sometimes it feels just so full coming out of them. And I'm just, it makes me so grateful for what I have, which, and I'll tell you another story. You want to hear another story?
Of course.
Go for it.
These are great stories. Well, one day I went up to this place in North Philly that's Edison 64. We did the raised bed gardens. I was going to do programs. And so I drive up with my truck, and there's a gate in the parking lot area, which is where we work. And it's an electronic gate. You punch in something and then the gate opens. So it is secure. Okay. So that's fine. You want to be secure. And I go up to the gate and I punch what I'm supposed to punch, and the thing doesn't open. I'm like, oh my goodness. Here I am, hanging out on the street with my truck in North Philly. Oh my God. As an old white woman. Okay, this is not ideal. So I'm punching it in and I'm kind of, now I'm starting to sweat. So up comes in his electric wheelchair, this gentleman that lives there. He's outside the gate, and he comes up and he realizes what the problem is, and somehow he knew what to do. So of course, me with my college degrees couldn't get the damn thing to open.
Exactly.
Get it open, and the thing opens, and then my life is saved. So I noticed the reason he was in a wheelchair was because he had no legs.
Oh my God.
And from that day on, I thought, I am never complaining about a pain in my knee or my hip or my ankle, or if I stub my toe, I am never complaining. I'm not saying a word, because that gentleman helped me, had the generosity of heart to help me when he saw I was in a little predicament there. And this poor guy didn't have any legs. I'm never complaining again.
Yeah. So, well, everybody wants to have a, everybody wants to have a sense of value, you know, and able to help other people no matter what, you know, no matter legs or no legs.
And that's what I find with these vets too, is that actually they have a huge generosity of spirit. They're kind to each other. They share. They're kind to me. They're respectful of me. I'm respectful of them, of course, but they're also, there's a kindness there. You know what? You don't meet kindness every day in every situation. Those folks who literally have nothing. I mean, I'm dealing with homeless people. They literally have nothing.
And yet, well, they have each other in that center at least, and they have the plants that you've provided. And so one thing we want to know is, what are the plants? So Aaron has this signature question.
Oh, just do it.
No, you have to do it.
What are the plants?
No, Aaron. I mean, Peg, what is your like go-to favorite plant in sessions?
Well, that's a great question, because I'm doing different groups, and some, many of them are just females, but some are mixed, and men and women. So,
let's say you're working with Edison 64.
Well, there we have the outdoor raised beds. So that's about putting in herbs, vegetables, that kind of thing. That's real food gardening, I'm going to say. Agriculture, so that they can harvest that stuff and go cook with it. Their apartment.
What do you find that they love to grow, or what they react to as far as, oh yeah, I've been wanting to grow this. I'm so excited to harvest this.
Well, you know, great question. I'll tell you a story. we suburban folks go in there with one mindset, and then they set us straight. You know, we're going in, oh, here's lettuce, here's broccoli, here's tomato plants.
Here's the agenda. You've got the
We have our agenda, and then again, we get taken to school.
Yeah, totally.
they wanted collards and okra. Because culturally, and again, you have to be sensitive, culturally sensitive. And to be culturally sensitive is to realize that they're more acquainted with collards. Okra, and those kinds of foods that we think are sort of more Southern foods. But that's culturally.
It's a cultural representation.
What their mama cooked. So. So we are for sure. I started collards in my basement under lights. So I have some collards coming on.
Nice. And you should have a collard green competition, like, you know, having a cucumber or the best looking tomato competition.
Well, I proposed that at the end of the season. I proposed this last year, but we didn't get around to it for a couple of reasons. But I said, we'll divide the group into two. We'll take all the stuff we've harvested out of these beds. We'll go into the kitchen area, and there'll be two groups, and they'll make their own salads. And then we'll see who makes the best salad, you know.
Oh my God. A little competition. It must have been really competitive with one another.
So that was, you know.
I hope everybody was nice to each other.
Well, we're the other thing to be sensitive to is that this is a food insecurity.
Situation. Yes.
You know, they need this food. And there's a food pantry there for folks to come in and get food. This is North Philly. This is food insecure. This is a violent place to be. So the stress of living there, we can address. And so I say, well, the goals here, you know, are stress reduction, anxiety reduction, camaraderie. Fellow residents, and, you know, we're trying to raise that depression, feeling of hopelessness.
We don't need any more of that sense of hopelessness. We need to alleviate that somehow, find a newfound opportunity of feeling like everybody, like we said, has a purpose and has a capability still, an ability to to contribute.
Yes, and the people at Edison 64 are just residents there. I mean, they're not the elderly necessarily. Mm-hmm. Some are a little older, but so they can walk around. And then what we were told was, because it's southern facing, it's the middle of the city in North Philly, and we were told was actually they come out there, because it has to be watered every day. It's raised beds, it's hot, you know, it's sunny, it's Philly. Mm-hmm. And what we were told was that actually they come out at night, in the evening, I'll say, in the evening, to water the beds, you know, after the sun has set, it's not so hot. And that's their socialization. They have chairs out there and they hang out and they talk and it's a social thing. And boy, that's the way to build community.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Peg. You've given us you've reset the button for us for 2022 and gotten, I know, our listeners pumped up, and both Aaron and I were emotional listening to you.
I was crying emotionally and then crying laughing. This whole thing, it was so great to hear your stories. And thank you for coming on tonight.
Really, thank you for sharing your stories. And I know it sounds like there's lots of layers to your stories, lots of perspectives, and maybe we'll have you on for chapter 2 of Peg.
Well, thank you. It was an honor to be with you, and it's really fun to talk about this. And as I say, I know that this works to improve people's lives. So I'm extremely dedicated to doing it. If you have a veteran in your life, please say thank you for your service every chance you get.
Right. And on that, and thank you for your work. Really, really amazing.
It's an honor to serve.
Thank you, everyone, so much for such a wonderful podcast. We will see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.